Let us take a moment, friends, to bow our heads together before the sermon. May your presence be known in each heart this morning. May the words from my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable to you, Rock, Redeemer, Transfiguring God. Amen. The message this morning is entitled Succession Duty. I had a restless, not able to write week this week. I think finally this pandemic caught right up with me and I hit that wall we've been talking about. That and the impeachment trial to the south on all the news feeds, and it just got to be all too much this week. I could not, or perhaps would not, put pen to paper or fingers to keyboard. So I did what any wise procrastinating person would do. I went to bed, hoping for a better frame of mind and the muse to visit yet again the next day. And when I again sat down at my desk, looking out at the streetscape, a blanket of new, untouched snow, bare branches, street lights, the smallest hint of snow falling, and further off the hulk of the skyscrapers scraping the sky, I heard the ping of an incoming text. Now I looked at the screen, expecting to be wowed by the offer of better insurance rates, and saw instead that my partner, Scott, who was out of town, had written, "You got this. Just write out of your goodness." Well, I guffawed and I scoffed, and then I wrote. A bit bleary-eyed from too little sleep and too much coffee, so be gentle with me this morning, dear hearer, and you can thank Scott for the content of this message. Now, we have heard three stories this morning, and we have told the first two this morning as they help make sense of the third. If we heard the story of Jesus read by Jason Myers without the story of Moses or of Elijah, then it quite frankly makes no sense. A cloud on a mountain, the urge to build three dwellings coming out of nowhere, face and clothing made brilliant, and a voice speaking out of the cloud. Say what? It is timely for me that we hear these stories today. Together they weave a tale about succession of prophetic leadership, a tale of intimacy between leader and follower and that relationship, and a tale of the poignancy of parting. And these are large tales that make no sense if you do not read them together. They are of one generation handing off to the other about the specific timeline of a people, the ancient Israelites. And just like the comfort of the succession of kings and queens, this is the succession of spiritual leaders. This is necessary for the continuation of a people, stories of the through line of a culture. And these stories point us to other tales in the scriptures we read each week. This tale of Elijah is structured so that it reaches its apex with the ascension of Elijah taken up into heaven in a whirlwind accompanied by the chariots of Israel. And in the story of Moses wandering with his people in the desert, we get the pivotal, foundational tale of Moses speaking with God in the cloud, on the mountain, receiving the tablets of the Ten Commandments, and coming down off the mountain, changed, transfigured, Moses, with a face so bright, he required veiling from then on. These are wow tales of mythic proportion. They are tales by which the ancients made sense of the world, and they are tales that contain even more ancient threads, hints of the chariot of the sun god, and not just hints, direct references to supernatural capabilities of this Elijah and this Moses, the one parting the Jordan and the other parting the Red Sea. Now, we could spend our time this morning with the likes of Joseph Campbell and of Northrop Frye. You may be familiar with them. They spoke of myth and of metaphor. We may spend time with the likes of these men following the thread of these tales over the centuries. And we could examine their impact and influence on cultures and on peoples right down to today. And it would be interesting, and it would be instructive, but it would be a lecture, not a sermon. So instead, hear this. The sermon seed in these tales of Moses and Elijah and Jesus, the seeds that bear homiletic fruit, are the ones that get right down at eye level with those who come next. With Elisha pleading for a double portion of the Spirit and tearing his clothes. With Aaron and Joshua unable to bear the brilliance of the presence of God in the face of Moses. With James and John and Peter up that mountain with Jesus, terrified. And right at eye level, we are with Elisha doggedly following Elijah wherever he wanders, from Gilgal to Bethel to Jericho and across the Jordan. Even when told to leave, he will not. Even when warned by the company of prophets that the Lord will take Elijah away, he does not turn back or turn away. There is a dogged desperation here that is heartrending. There is the finely drawn meaning of Shakespeare's line, "Parting is such sweet sorrow." Sweetness and sorrow, gratitude and loss, the reality of our very human lives on this blue spinning planet. And right at eye level with Aaron and the wanderers in the desert, we cry out for such a mountaintop experience. We yearn to stand with Moses in the cloud. We seek conversation with God. We cast about for purpose, for making meaning of our wandering on this spinning blue planet. And there are so many ways we seek to make sense, any sense, of the remarkable gift of life. One is to hand off to another this responsibility, the church, a leader, the state. Another is to decide there is no meaning to be had. And a third is to not bother yourself much about any of this meaning-making stuff and just carry on. But you are listening to me today, I imagine, because you have a sense that these are not enough. You have, as Augustine put it, a restless heart. Or more graphically, you have an itch that needs scratching, a hole that needs filling, a wound that needs healing. Or perhaps you are listening today because you have found that rest. You have healed. Perhaps you have known the exquisite relief of scratch sated, spirit found, rest taken. Perhaps you have been with Martin Luther King on the mountaintop. And I speak to you today, right to every single one of you. And I say, not out of hubris or arrogance, but out of the meaning I have found and the mantle of leadership I have taken on. So we are right at eye level with James and Peter and John. On that mountaintop, watching these three, Elijah and Moses and Jesus, watching them, we are told, having a conversation. We are told this tale of succession in a specific time and place to a specific people. This line of prophetic succession from one male to another to another. And then, of course, there is a cloud out of which God speaks. And, of course, there is the over-the-top word pictures of transfiguration and dazzling white clothes, such as ones no one on earth could ever bleach. And this story loses me right there. And it does so because of how we humans have seen fit to incorporate its details, its import, into our teaching, our seeking, our judging, and our understanding. Purity, whiteness, unsullied, untainted, set apart on a mountain, obscured from human sight by cloud, except to a chosen few. One gender represented and elevated. This is not the God I sought. This is not the God I seek. This is not the God in whom we can find rest. The nugget of this passage is three words. Listen to him. Not worship him, not bow down to him, just listen to him. And if we listen to this Jesus, we will find the goodness of God. And we will find it not by setting ourselves apart or above or below, but by listening to his words and finding the through line directly to our souls, directly transfiguration. By listening to his words and finding the through line in leaders of whatever gender, in all avenues of life, by listening to those leaders who plant seeds that further the kingdom, trusting in the goodness of God to sprout an immense forest that they will not live to see. By listening to Jesus' words of community and caritas and translating them directly into the trajectory of our individual work, of the use of our individual gifts, of the way we spend our individual energies, and the certainty, despite or perhaps because of the sweet sorrow we find in life. The certainty of our participation in the goodness of God, regardless of geography, transfigured forever and ever and evermore.